1 hour to the books, one more to go. This is the weekend on Sports 1140. Matt George with you. Charles T. Hamilton is out this week. He will be back after the holidays. He's in the Bay Area with his family, so he can be back with his Golden State Warriors people. Those people down there. It's good to send him back to where he belongs for a little bit, but no, we look forward to having him back here in the near future. But with him gone, it gives me the opportunity to do something pretty special and pretty awesome that I get to do. So, quick thing about me. I graduated in 2016 from the University of William Jessup University here in the greater Sacramento area. Technically, it is in Rocklin, Roseville, right off of Highway 65. Some of you know where I am talking about, but that was my alma mater where I went, spent 4 years, and I had the privilege while I was there of being the sports broadcaster, play-by-play broadcaster for multiple teams, also hosting a show, basically working with the athletic director and working with the athletic department to put together kind of a media program centered around William Jessup University Athletics. And I got to grow with the program, got to watch the program grow. I got to see it continue since I moved away. And one of the guys that I worked very, very closely with was he was hired as the head coach of the William Jessup Warriors basketball team my sophomore year. Since then, he has still continued to be the head coach and now is the athletic director of the William Jessup University Athletic Department. And he joins me right now, and it is an absolute pleasure and really special to be able to invite him onto this program. It is head coach of the William Jessup Warriors men's basketball team, Lance Von Vogt. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time.
Matt, I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to being able to do this for a while, and it's good to be able to talk some the right Warriors hoops, not those Golden State Warriors. Let's talk some William Jessup Warrior hoops. And, Coach, I don't even know where to start with this team because they're off to a 10-2 start. You just beat last night Northwest Indian 122-68 at home. Am I reading that right? 122-68 last night, Coach.
Yeah, there was a lot of points going up on that board. We had some guys that got hot. We shared the ball. You know, eight guys in double figures. We spread it around a little bit, and it was a good game for us. The guys enjoy it. You know, some of the guys that haven't played as many minutes had an opportunity to get on the floor and compete and show that they're capable as well. And I think that'll bode well in the future, you know, moving forward.
So before we dive in specifically about the specifics of this team and how they're performing, because there really is a lot to talk about, and I have a lot of stats that I've just been looking up and my eyes have been getting bigger and bigger reading some of these numbers. But for people who don't necessarily know or understand what William Jessup basketball is, can you share a little bit of that with them?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we're part of the NAIA. We're in the, you know, Division I. NAIA is broken up into Division I and Division II, so we compete in the Division I, the highest level of NAIA basketball. We're in the Golden State Athletic Conference, which is recognized as, if not the number one conference in the country. It's in the conversation with, the other top conferences in the country. Our conference has produced multiple national, you know, title winners. Jessup's new to the conference. We're just now entering our fourth year in the conference, and it's been a great transition for us. We've been raising the bar year over year. Since my arrival, had some great support from the staff at the university. Great president and support from the administration of the university, and with that, we've been able to build a nationally ranked program that's been competing at the highest level and earning trips to the national tournament, for the past couple of years. So it's been a lot of fun.
And from my perspective, it's been fun to watch because when I came there, the first year that I was there was the last year that William Jessup was a member of the CalPAC conference and then made the transition to the GSAC. And it's been, like you said, raising the bar for you, your program, but really for Jessup Athletics as a whole, taking that next step up. And the competition has raised on all fronts, and especially with men's basketball, but really all the Jessup programs have really been succeeding. And as an athletic director, separate yourself from necessarily from the basketball side, it must be cool to see how the school and how the department and program has grown amidst good competition in the GSAC.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to rewind that a little bit. You know, Matt, I'll be honest with you. I think that you played a big role in where we're at today, just in the branding of the athletic department and allowing, the university to see, how much athletics could be a part of the mission of the university and moving it forward as a whole with what you did in the media area, and then the broadcasting of games. And then, with that, I came in and you were already there. You were already doing some amazing things. And I was just able to build a little bit off of what you did. So as an athletic director, it's been a blessing to be, come in and join in to, the party and able to build off of what other people were doing and just make it, and continue to improve it. We've got a great staff. I mean, I have probably one of the most amazing athletic staffs that you could imagine. They put in an enormous amount of, hours, but, heart and soul into everything that they do. And it shows in the product that we put on the floor and on, the field, or the cross country course or out there on the golf course. Our golf team finished fifth in the nation last year and went to the national tournament. We've just got a lot of teams that are performing at a really high level, but it takes the entire university to make it happen like that, from the admissions department to financial aid to the president, student life, everybody getting involved. It's not an individual person that's making it happen. It's, truly a community. And that's the cool part about it.
Talking with the head coach and athletic director at William Jessup University, my alma mater right here on KHDK, Lance Von Vogt joining us. And I appreciate what you said, Coach, and I've always called Jessup the land of opportunity because it gives so many opportunities to so many people, including a bunch of athletes, including some of your players. We mentioned the win last night, 122-68. You already had three games this season where you guys have scored more than 100 points, including a win over our longtime rival, which is Simpson up in Reading, which always feels good. Tonight you have a home game against New Hope Christian. Brag about your guys a little bit, the opportunity that you've given these young men and how they've come together and they're playing so well.
Absolutely. I think that this group of guys is a group of guys that I was able to, wholly recruit. Every guy on the roster is a guy that's been selected by the staff, and we've been able to get them in. We've had some of these guys on redshirt years where they got a year in training before they stepped on the floor, so they understand the system. This team also is an extremely unselfish team. We have 211 assists this year versus our in the 12 games, and our opponents only have 119, which means we're almost on a 2-to-1 ratio of the number of baskets that are assisted. And we have over, about 60% of the total baskets that we've made this year have been assisted. So to me, if I want to brag about our guys, it's the unselfishness that they present every day in practice, and they translate that to the game, the energy that they bring. We've got guys that don't mind hard work, and I think that bears out in our defensive numbers. We're right there knocking on the door to be one of the top 10 defensive teams in the country, and we probably are one of the top 10 teams in the country defensively, and I think that's where we know. That's who we are. That's our identity. And we always try to stay in character and let our identity lead us, and not let the circumstances of the situation lead us. And this is a group of guys that has bought into that. And they understand what it takes to be great. And it's just getting a little bit better every day. It's just pursuing greatness every day, in your everyday and every action, and allowing that to lead you to the results. You don't worry about the results. They take care of themselves.
Well, Coach, you brought up the defense, and I think that's interesting because my first reaction after seeing the amount of points that your team has been putting up is, man, this team must be making all their strides and making all these fireworks in terms of rankings offensively. But when you go and look at your rankings and the defensive numbers, those are also extremely astounding. And from having worked with you and know what kind of program you put together, you emphasize defense as extremely important part of your game, which then turns into success on the offensive end of the floor. You're also fifth in Division I in rebounds a game. You guys average almost 47 rebounds per game, ninth in steals and offensive rebounds. In terms of point totals that you allow, you're ranked 11th in Division I, 12th in assists, just putting up numbers all over the board. Would you say this is one of the best and most well-rounded teams you've ever had?
Definitely the most versatile. The team from 2015-16 was just an overpowering beast of a team. We had a couple of brutal injuries that lost years to some of our top guards during that year, but we were still able, because we were so good down low and we were just so powerful, that we were able still to, be a national ranked program and finish in the Sweet 16 and challenge for a national title. This team's a lot different than that. We come at people in waves. We're deeper, and we're more versatile. So we defend differently. We rebound differently. We score differently. So I'm not sure, it's hard to, compare year to year. I think this team is just an independent team. But I tell you this, at the end of the year, we might look back at this and say that this season, that these guys put together, one of the best seasons to remember in Jessup history. They definitely have that ability. What I tell them always is this group has a chance to be special.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that we've got some pieces that can do things that is going to make it very hard for other teams to be successful against us when we're in the right mind and playing well.
Coach, I'm just trying to wrap my head around some of these numbers that are in front of me. You also average, your team averaging right now 85.5 points per game. You're shooting 47% from the field and allowing only 67 points per game. If rough estimate, I was looking, you guys have scored already in just 12 games, you scored over 200 points more than your opponent. That's just extremely exciting and absolutely ridiculous. I know that this Golden State Athletic Conference is no joke, and we're going to talk about conference play in a little bit. But in terms of preseason and these games that you're scheduling before conference play starts, what is your approach to what kind of competition that you want your guys to face, and what do you want to see out of them before the start of conference play?
Yeah, I think you want to have a well-rounded, conference slate, non-conference slate. We know how difficult the conference play is going to be, and so all your games need to be organized and put together in a fashion that it prepares you for what you're going to see in conference. I mean, we play, a lot of very established programs in the non-conference schedule. Oregon Tech, who's won four national titles. We play them home and home. We play a lot of our longtime rivals from the Cal Pack and Cal Maritime, UC Merced, yeah. Simpson, Pacific Union, but legitimate teams. Pacific Union went to the national tournament last year. Cal Maritime has won their, their league title since we left the Cal Pack every single season.
Yeah.
Simpson brought in a new coach and they're doing great things up there. But, all of these teams are teams that, help progress, who we are and what we're doing. We're playing Southern Oregon again next Tuesday at home after playing them up in, up in Oregon last month. And, I think that our schedule is one that resembles a program that's looking to grow every day. I mean, we're scheduling difficult teams that you have to be, on point with in order to be successful. And that prepares us for a conference play.
Coach, now you guys made the Nationals in 2016. I had the privilege of actually being there when it was announced that you guys would had made it to Nationals, which is extremely exciting. Then last year, you guys just missed the cut. So, of course, the ultimate goal is making Nationals and making a deep Nationals run this year. I know that is the goal and that's in the mind of you and all your players, but how much do you have to put that on the back burner and just focus at one game at a time?
Well, that's everything. I mean, Joel Embiid says it the best. It's the process of becoming great. Like, you just have to trust it, and it's just about the everyday. I think I referenced that before, but we come into practice and we try to win that practice. We try to make sure we're just improving at least 1% over what we were the previous day. We're not successful on every one of those occasions, but if we win, 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 days, over time there's an accumulation of progress. That progress leads to improvement, and that improvement leads to performance, and that performance obviously leads to the results we desire. So we don't focus on the results, and honestly, we don't even really focus on the scoreboard other than, we're playing to win the game. But a lot of times the scoreboard lies. You can win a game and not play well, and the other team got more out of their ability than yours. And then there's times that you may lose a game, but the other team is just much more talented than you, and you actually outplayed them on that given day, given the amount of talent that you're rolling out. We try to look at things, only on the basis of, are we playing up to our capabilities, and are we playing to our level? Is the situation defining us, or are we defining the situation and the circumstances? And when we can do that, we can just separate it. We just let the performance take care of itself. And then at the end of the year, we think we'll like the results. With this group of guys, we definitely have the talent that if we do that at the end of the year, we'll probably get that call and we'll have an opportunity to go to Nationals again.
William Jessup, University Athletic Director and Head Men's Basketball Coach Lance Von Vogt joining me right here on the weekend. Coach, you preach team-wide play, and this is a team, a group of guys, a solid unit instead of a group of individuals. However, you do have five different players averaging double digits in scoring. You have a bunch of players that just work really, really well together but bring such great individual skill sets. Any of them that you want to point out, or any guys that we should keep our eyes out on for your roster?
Well, absolutely. You know, everything starts with our sophomore starting point guard. You know, he started as a freshman, had a great freshman campaign, but he's really grown in his leadership. He's become a lot more selective in his shot selection, become more of a distributor, more of a guy that can really run a team. And we function really well when he's playing at his best. And when he's at his best, he's really good. That's Brandon Lindsey. And you know, he's just a guy that I just see growing every day. In what he does to be, you know, a point guard of a top contending team. But you know, one of the guys that we run everything through is Keith Phillips, who is a Detroit native, and he kind of brings that Motor City work ethic to our team. He's I would say like our version of a Draymond Green. Mm. He's 6'6", and he can play inside and outside. He can defend multiple positions. You know, he's surprisingly athletic, has the ability to post up because he's got a wide body. And there's really, he's just a mismatch waiting to happen. As soon as he starts shooting free throws better, he's going to be a real problem. So, you know, once we get that free throw thing figured out, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to have a response for him. He has a chance to compete for player of the year for the conference. And we have about 16 to 18 Division I transfers in our conference this year.
Wow.
So a lot of talent. And, you know, Keith is going to be right there at the top with those guys. We played UC Davis the other day. You know, we played up and went down to Davis, and Keith had 24 and 15 with, you know, probably four assists and three steals in the game. And, you know, on that given day was probably the best player on the floor. So he's really talented. And then we got a transfer from Biola University who just left our league. Louis Medeiros, who's been shooting the ball really well. He's a special offensive talent. He just always plays at a very, competes, like on offense and defense. He's always ready to do what he needs to do. And, you know, he's shooting a high percentage from three, a high percentage from the field for a guard, shooting well from the free throw line, rebounds the ball because he's got great athleticism. And he's been a real steal for us coming in this year.
Coach, conference play begins on January 4th when you travel to Westmont to take on the other Warriors of the conference. What teams in the GSAC do you have your eye on that you may be a little, not necessarily concerned about, but what teams are you looking at to give you the most competition, or is it really conference-wide you're going to have to be on your A game every single night?
You know, I think that we legitimately have seven teams that are extremely good, and we have eight in the conference this year. Next year we'll have 10. We'll add Ottawa and Light Pacific will come in, and we'll move back to a 10-team conference. But this year we have eight, and there's seven teams that can compete for the title if they get it going and they start playing well.
Wow.
Now I would say that, you know, right now if you were to look at the league, Masters, which is ranked fifth in the nation currently, is the team to beat. Mm-hmm. They won the conference tournament championship last year. I think they made it to the Elite Eight in the national tournament, and they returned everybody but one guy, and they brought in one guy that was a contributor. They lost three guys, but only one was one that was, you know, a contributor, and they replaced him with a couple D1 transfers and another big time player. So they're really good. Hope International, who's been in the top 5 and 10 in the nation every year for the last 3 or 4 years, is right there with them. And then, you know, we got the other teams like Jessup, like us, that are knocking on that door. Westmont is going to be Westmont. They're always competing, and they're always in the national rankings. Arizona Christian, I think, is 9-1 right now out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And really talented. You know, last year they had a little bit of a bump in the road, but before that they'd went to 4 or 5 straight national tournaments. So, you know, they're going to be where they need to be. And Vanguard Reloaded, they're number 22 in the country. And, you know, they had a couple of years where they'd gotten pushed down the rankings after they won the national title, I think in 2014. They haven't been back to the national tournament since. But this year they've reloaded and they brought in about four Division I transfers, and they had a lot of guys come back, including their starting point guard, who is just terrifically talented, Shaquille Dawkins. So, you know, I mean, there's really no space to hide in our conference. And every game that you lace them up, it's going to be like an ACC or a Pac-12 tilt.
Fantastic. I like that you brought up that you guys played against UC Davis about a week ago, or not too long ago, because I wanted to ask you about UC Davis and about this region as a whole. So NAIA conference play or nationals play, you have managed to make it there. Last year, the Aggies of UC Davis made it to the NCAA National Championship, which is a tremendous accomplishment. Can you talk a little bit about this greater Sacramento region for college basketball and how the bar just keeps getting raised higher and higher, and what you expect from this region in terms of college basketball?
Absolutely. I'm going to tell you, Jim Less has done an amazing job over there, and I really appreciate him, you know, giving us the opportunity to come down and play. That's 2 years in a row that we've had the opportunity to play at Davis, and it's something that we hope to continue on our side. It's great competition for us. But that program, they're an example for what can be done with great coaching and great kids. They run and they stay in character. They run their offense, they run their defense. And you know, like a great movie actor, you know, that's always in character. You watch them on the screen and you really believe that they are who they are, even though they're only acting. That's what his guys do, and that's what his teams do. I mean, they shoot the shots that the team wants them to shoot. Mm-hmm. They defend the way the team wants them to defend. They're consistently in character. They're one of the best and most well-coached teams that I've seen or coached against. And that's where their success lies. They got terrific talent. But better than their talent is their ability to be coachable and to play the system that Coach Less has put in for them. And that makes them an extremely difficult team. I see that team beating other teams that are more talented than them on a consistent basis. And that's just a kudo to those guys in the program that have bought in with both feet. And you can tell that when you're competing against them on an annual basis. So, you know, that's amazing. You know, another guy just down the street's having a little bit of a tough year so far, but the amazing things that Brian Katz has done with Sac State basketball. And Brian's a good friend of mine, and I've known Brian for years. And for him to raise the level of Sac State, when he came into Sac State, it was one of the worst Division I programs in the country for NCAA. And then he raised it all to the point where they're competing for the conference championship with an opportunity to go to the national tournament like UC Davis did last year. And that program, while struggling a little bit so far this year, has really garnered some national respect and regional respect with their ability as well. So for me, you know, the capital city area for basketball is exploding right now. A lot of great coaches, a lot of great players, players that are staying local and playing at some of these universities, and players that are going, you know, off to like Michigan and getting drafted in an NBA draft, you know, out of Capital Christian. You know, you just see a lot of really good basketball right now in the area.
Do you guys have a date picked out yet, a game picked out for the Coaches versus Cancer night yet?
You know, I believe it is on the schedule. I don't have it sitting right in front of me, but I do know that we do have a date, and I'll have my pink socks and my white shoes.
That's what I was going to ask about. You still got the kicks.
It'll be ready to go.
Awesome. And then you're always sporting the suspenders. I still see the suspenders at every single game.
Hey, you know, if it works, you know, why change?
That's what I'm talking about. I like it. Might as well be comfortable in your own skin. It definitely does work, Coach. Again, you're off to a 10-2 start this year. Last year, didn't make the national tournament, but still finished 18-13. The year before that, 19-11. So it's just been constant improvement with your program. Absolutely major congratulations to you for how your program has grown. It's been so much fun, both on the inside and the outside, to see it continue to flourish. Lastly, for anyone who wants to start following William Jessup men's basketball and going to games or being able to keep track of how the team is doing, where can they go and how can people get involved with your program, Coach?
Absolutely. You know, we have so many different, you know, mediums now with social media and so forth. But, you know, the easiest media is obviously jessupathletics.com. And we got all of our sports loaded there. You can download the schedule directly from there. It'll go straight to your phone. Invite everybody to come out to the game. You know, you can check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, on, you know, Snapchat, on Instagram. We have all of those things as well. Our sports information department's out of this world with those.
Yeah.
But if you just go to jessupathletics.com, and we have all the links where you can, you know, download our handles for all of those different social media apps, that's how you communicate.
That is Lance Vaughn Vogt, the athletic director of William Jessup University and the head men's basketball coach. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll definitely have to do it again. It's so good to talk to you.
Matt, be blessed. Thank you.
And it was a good conversation indeed with head coach Vaughn Vogt. If you missed bits and pieces of it, you can check it out on khdk.com. I'm sure Jessup will also get it on their website. We'll send it to them and get everything figured out there. From one guest to another, we'll take the break and come right back. Oakland A's insider Joe Stiglitz joins me in just a couple minutes right here on The Weekend. Welcome back into The Weekend. Matt George with you. Big thanks again to head men's basketball coach and athletic director at William Jessup University, Lance Vaughn Vogt, for joining me. And we go from one guest immediately to another. And I've been looking forward to talk to this guy for quite a while. Winter meetings are going on. And Joe Stiglitz, Oakland A's insider for NBC Sports Bay Area, joining me. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been very happy, a very happy camper this week, because I'm a big fan of Stephen Piscotty and what he can bring to a team. And as soon as I heard rumors and rumblings that potentially he was linked to the A's in a trade, I got really excited, and things just seemed to move really quickly. And suddenly he's an Oakland A. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you see that he immediately brings to the table and what immediate impact he can have for this Oakland A's program?
Yeah, I feel like the A's kind of dealt in reverse here a little bit. I feel like usually they're getting the prospects from a team and they're sending kind of a more established player somewhere else. And Scotty's track record isn't really extensive, but he's had some success in the bigs. He's under contract for the next 5 years, $29.5 million that whole time. So, you know, he's an everyday player in one of the corner outfield spots who's very affordable. Hit 22 homers 2 years ago. Struggled last year. He's had some well-documented off-field issues. Last year, his mom battled ALS. He left the team for a while, so pretty fair to say he had some off-field distractions going on last year and understandably had a trouble focusing on baseball. But a pretty young guy who just turned 27 right before spring training. Again, he's got 20 homer power in his bat. Scouts have told me he's got a lot of athleticism in the corner spots. I haven't seen him a whole lot, being he's played the National League, but I'd expect him probably to slide into right field and be a really solid defender out there. You can move Matt Joyce into left field. Maybe we'll see who grabs the center field spot, but I think Chad Pinder's going to fit into the corner outfield spot somewhere too. But the other big thing, Matt, is, you know, you have Piscotty, you add an outfielder, you're able to move Chris Davis away from being an everyday outfielder into the DH spot, and I think the outfield defense just improves that way, and I think that's a major component of this whole transaction as well.
And we'll talk about more on Piscotty here in just a second, but you mentioned moving Chris Davis to the DH. That move was made possible after the A's dealt Ryan Healy to the Mariners in November. That was a little over a month ago now. They got in return pitcher Emilio Pagan and an infield prospect Alexander Campos. Before we talk about those two prospects that they got in return, I was a little disappointed to see Healy go, because I thought I saw what he was bringing to the table. But was this move basically completely made so that DH spot could be open up for Davis?
Well, I think that was a big part of it. I think also the A's are pretty clear they wanted to improve the bullpen, and they think they got an important bullpen piece in Emilio Pagan. And I think when they looked at their big league roster and they looked at what they could afford to part with, Ryan Healy was a guy they thought they could do that, because he really didn't have a defensive position. He brings power to the table, but the power is one thing that the A's offense does bring. I think this offense lacks a lot, but one thing that they don't lack is home run pop. So, you know, they feel like it still make up for that home run power. They get a bullpen piece, and it allows them to move Chris Davis to DH. I'm with you. My first thought was, you know, after the way this team finished last year and the young players coming up, and Healy was really a part of that young core, I didn't want to see kind of that group of young guys get broken up yet. You know, I just wanted to see them stay together at least one more year and see if they continue to develop and how that comes along. Obviously, the A's felt he was one guy they could part with. He's a fiery guy. I'd expect, look, he's going to see the A's 19 times a season now, and I'd expect him to come out pretty inspired and fired up to play the A's. And I think he's going to be a tough customer for their pitchers to deal with. But again, they got a bullpen piece. I think Emilio Pagan is going to be an important guy. And they like Campos, even though he's only 17 years old. You don't know what any 17-year-old is going to develop into, but Campos is a shortstop and an athletic kid, and the A's like him too.
Joe Stiglitz joining me from NBC Sports Bay Area, your Oakland A's insider. You can check out all of his work, does amazing stuff covering the A's all year long, and there always seems to be a story surrounding these A's. But back to the recent Stephen Piscotty trade, we know that Bob Melvin loves his utility guys. So does Piscotty fit that role pretty good? And what would you expect is his main purpose or goal or role with this A's lineup?
Yeah, I think he's going to be an everyday guy, and I think it's just a matter of which corner outfield spot he plays in. He's played mainly right field for the Cardinals. He can play left. He can also play center in a pinch, but he admits he's not super comfortable in center. He likes right field the best.
Yeah.
You know, the A's had Joyce out in right field last year. Chad Pinder played out there and showed a nice, really nice strong arm. But I'd expect them, you know, you make a trade for Piscotty, you're obviously targeting him to be an impact guy for you. I'd expect him probably to play right field. Again, you can play Joyce in left field. We'll see how it shakes out in spring training. But I think Piscotty's going to be a regular guy. And, again, it's a guy under contract who theoretically should just be starting to enter the prime of his career. He turns 27 before the season starts. So he's going to play a big role. And he's going to be a right-handed bat, too, in the lineup. So he's definitely going to be a key guy for them.
We definitely don't expect the A's to be done making moves. They certainly have a lot of holes to fill and moves that they can make. But really, their entire division, something's going on with the AL West with all these moves that are being made and acquisitions that are being made. Shohei Ohtani was the big name that ends up going to the Angels. Also, Ian Kinsler now with the Angels. The Mariners got D. Gordon along with Ryan Healy from the A's. And, of course, Houston Astros, World Series champions. How much better is this division getting? And how big of an uphill climb is it going to be for the A's to get back into contention?
Yeah, I think it will be. And Texas Rangers, you know, they're not done in the offseason either. I'm waiting to see what else they do so far. So this whole division, I think you're right, it's getting stronger. And, you know, realistically, even if the A's are better, and I expect them to be a better club this upcoming season, you know, are they still the fifth best team in a five-team division? It could be when you look at the rest of the division and the moves that are being made. It doesn't mean the A's can't move up the ladder, but it's going to be tough. And the Angels especially are the team that's really – making everybody sit up and take notice right now. They also added Zach Cozart. He's going to play third base for them. You got Simmons at short, and you got Kinsler at second base. You go along with Ohtani. They've really improved their roster, and they've done it really. They're not a team that's got a deep farm system. So they've gone out and signed guys, made deals, and they've really improved their roster. Trying to make a go of it with Albert Pujols getting older, you know, trying to see if they can make a run. I think with him still as a productive bat, so they'll do whatever they can do. They're looking impressive right now. I think on paper, obviously, they're the second-best team in the division right now, I think, after the Astros, if the Angels starting pitching holds up. Every team's got question marks, but you're right. It seems like all around the division, teams are being active this winter. They're trying to get better, and on paper, they look stronger.
Ohtani was a name that I'm sure many A's fans were hoping for, the same situation that happened with Yoenis Cespedes, that the A's were the surprising team that would swoop in and snatch that national talent and that star power. Unfortunately, he ended up going to the rival. We've heard so much about him recently over the past couple months, the Japanese Babe Ruth, they call him, the 100-mile-per-hour fastball, but also a very capable bat as well. What have you heard and seen from Ohtani, and how much of this is hype, and how much do you think he's going to be a star right away in this league?
Well, being that we haven't seen him much, none of us have seen him much play live, I'm hearing a lot of the same things you are, and I think I kind of agree with the sentiment that's out there, and that seems like from a pitching standpoint, you got to like the chances of him being an impact guy at the top of a rotation or near the top of a rotation. Offensively, hitting-wise, I'm a little bit more skeptical just because he's not going to be in the batter's box every day. It's obviously going to be an adjustment facing major league pitching compared to what he was facing in Japan. And how much of an impact can he make offensively? And you know, this is unprecedented. So the Angels are going to throw him out there at DH on some non-pitching days, but how often can you do it? You want to keep him fresh. Does he play the outfield at all? I'm not crazy about the idea of him playing the outfield.
Yeah.
And trying to uncork throws to home plate on days he's not pitching. I just don't think that's a good thing. I don't know if the Angels have that in mind. It seems like he'll be a part-time DH. But can he do it all? You know, can he stay healthy and be fresh and ready to pitch every fifth day? The Angels are banking that he will. So I just think I think most of his impact is going to come in the starting rotation. If you're the Angels, that's kind of what you lack the most, is a consistent starting pitcher in that rotation that's been so ravaged by injuries. And obviously he's got an elbow issue right now that we found out about this past week. So we'll see if Ohtani's completely healthy, but I think he can be an absolute shutdown pitcher. How much production he gives you in the batter's box, I'm a little less certain of.
Is this a bit of a experiment by the MLB and MLB teams to see, okay, how feasible is the idea of having a two-way player, a pitcher that could potentially play in the outfield on his off days? Is this just a lot of experimenting by the MLB, or do you think this could potentially open up the door for more players like Ohtani to potentially make their way into the league?
I think it's possible it could. I think all the other 29 teams are definitely watching to see how this goes because, you know, I think you're seeing some young guys come up. If you look at the draft last year, there was a top five kid. His name escapes me right now, but he was kind of a two-way guy.
Yeah.
And you know, the plans are for him to get some at-bats along with pitching on the mound a little bit. So, you know, there are guys, people coming up in youth baseball, guys coming up who could possibly have this kind of potential. But I think all the teams are watching to see if this can happen because there is some risk. There is some unknown on how much a guy can handle. You know, it's not like these guys go out if they're starting pitchers and just throw every fifth day and they're completely inactive the other days. They're doing their, you know, workout routines every day in the weight room. They're throwing a long toss. I mean, guys get out there and throw the day after throwing seven innings in a game, they're throwing the next day. These pitchers throw constantly. So if a guy's not staying in that routine and he's serving as a DH or playing in the field occasionally, does it throw off his pitching schedule? How does his arm handle everything? That's the unknown right now. That's what we're going to see with Ohtani, how it all unfolds.
Oakland A's insider Joe Stiglitz joining me. Back to the A's specifically. I think we, most of A's fans, myself included, were pleasantly surprised to see how the young bats of the A's performed. Chapman, Olson, Pinder, guys like that, that really showed a lot of pop and a lot of exciting offensive ability. It's still the day-to-day defense is a question mark, and then the pitching staff is a massive question mark. Where would you start in addressing this pitching problems and trying to get your pitching staff back to be able to support the offense that these young players are putting out?
Yeah, well, look, they've addressed the bullpen a little bit. They brought in Pagan. They brought in another right-hander, Yusmeiro Petit, who's going to be a long man. They're still trying to go after a left-handed reliever. They're looking at the free agent market for that. That's a major need, is bringing another left-handed reliever. So the bullpen they're working on, that needs to be a priority, and they seem like they're paying attention to that. I think they need to bring in at least one more starter, some sort of veteran-type guy. Doesn't have to be a huge splash. I'd love to see them go after CeCe Sabathia, but doesn't have to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just some kind of veteran guy, whether it's an Andrew Kashner, a Hellickson, somebody like that on the open market, or even somebody on a minor league deal who just comes in looking to prove something to provide some competition. I just think they need a little more depth in that starting rotation right now because you've got Kendall Graveman, you got Sean Manaea, and after that I think you've got a lot of question marks with some young guys who have some potential,
right,
but they've got some question marks, whether it's Jarrell Cotton, Daniel Mingden, Paul Blackburn is coming off an injury, guys like that. So we'll see what happens. But I think the rotation has got to be better than it was last year, and I'd be surprised if they don't bring in at least one guy from the outside for spring training.
Kendall Graveman won the number one in the rotation spot in spring training last year after Sonny Gray went down with yet another injury. Of course, he's now with the New York Yankees. Is that spot still Graveman's to lose, or is it just as open of competition this spring?
Yeah, I think he's the number one guy, and I think the A's are okay right now with him as a number one guy because this is a team that's not looking to compete. You know, they're not envisioning a postseason roster. Who's going to match up against the other team's ace right now? I think it's more important for the A's just to be strong 1-5 in their rotation and fill in the holes 1-5 and just, you know, depth-wise feel good about the starter you're throwing out there each and every day, more so than is Graveman a true ace right now. You know, I don't think they need to worry too much about the role of ace right now. They need Graveman to be healthy. I think if he's healthy, he'll be a good, reliable veteran guy at the top of the rotation. You know, Manaea, you expect him to continue to take a step forward. And then after that, you know, can guys like Cotton step up? Mingden, Paul Blackburn, A.J. Puck eventually. I'm not sure if A.J. Puck's going to be ready for the majors at some point this season. He's our number one pitching prospect. At some point, he becomes a factor too, along with other guys in the minor league. So I just want to see them kind of develop that depth 1-5. And right now, Graveman's the guy at the top.
One of the really unfortunate and negative storylines of this offseason has been with Bruce Maxwell, the upcoming catcher, who the A's were hoping to turn into their every single or everyday guy going forward. Have you heard anything about Bruce and what is going to be happening with him going forward?
Well, as far as the legal process, it's still a big unknown right now. His next court appearance is going to be December 28th. And, you know, who knows if this thing goes to trial. Obviously, it was a felony for aggravated assault with allegedly pointing a gun at somebody in Arizona. So that is serious stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
The A's right now are still saying, you know, Bruce, if he's in camp with us to start spring training, he's going to be our guy. And they're right now, publicly, they're sounding confident that they're still going to have him available to be the number one catcher. And that tells you that they believe it was a one-time mistake. It's not going to happen again. He doesn't have any real prior criminal history at all, so the A's seem like they're willing to kind of forgive and forget and leave it in the rearview mirror if he gets cleared up legally. That's what we don't know right now. And it seems like right now they're not actively looking for any catcher outside the organization. So right now it's Bruce Maxwell. If he's back, he's going to be the main guy, the left-handed hitter. Then you got Josh Fagley and or Dustin Garneau as the right-handed part of that platoon. But give me a lot of attention around Bruce when he comes back. If he does come back, even if he gets cleared legally, he takes a plea bargain and avoids jail time. I don't think he's going to have any jail time based on the fact he's got no prior criminal record. But we'll just see when he gets back to the A's, at what point in spring training that is. Maybe it's at the beginning, but the A's seem like they're still ready to go with him behind the plate.
And that's got to be encouraging for him to know that the organization is still standing behind him and that they're not willing to just cut the tie and cut their losses and move on from it. I'm sure that feels good for him, and hopefully everything can be worked out because he is a good talent that I'm sure the A's would like to have develop into what he's potentially could become there behind the plate. Last thing for you, Joe, another bit of negative news that came out recently was in regards to the Oakland A's ballpark and their downtown site. That seems to have fallen through. Do you have any update on what's next for that, or if they're looking at other sites or any new news involving that?
Not a whole lot of new news coming out of it, other than it seems like the A's are kind of back to square one here with this storyline. Now, really, Matt, it's been going on for, what, over a decade now. We've been talking about the ballpark and can they eventually get a ballpark. And, you know, we're talking a lot about this year's team and the roster and how it looks. And in the long term, really everything else, all the baseball stuff is irrelevant if the A's don't find a spot somewhere to get a ballpark built right now. And that's just a big unknown because they wanted to build at this called the Peralta site right near Laney College near downtown Oakland, just off of Interstate 880. They thought they had a good plan to build there, and the college administrator said, you know what, this isn't good for us. They took negotiations off the table. So right now, the A's aren't saying much publicly. If they go back and look at the Coliseum, I think that'd be the easiest, most realistic thing to do. They don't seem thrilled with that spot. Do they go back and look at Howard Terminal? I can tell you, Howard Terminal's got as many complications as the Peralta site's going to have as far as environmental issues, state approval that you need to build there near the water. So there's a lot of roadblocks wherever they look, aside from the Coliseum. We'll see if they revisit the Coliseum. We'll see if they revisit Peralta talks, but that would have to be the college administrators at Laney saying, we're having a change of heart because they're the ones that pull the plug on the talks there. So right now I don't have a whole lot for you other than it's an unknown for the A's right now long term. But they got to find something. You need a new ballpark. They need to attract more fans. You need to generate more revenue, obviously, especially with the revenue sharing checks being cut off over the next couple of seasons.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you very soon and have a very Merry Christmas.
You do the same. Thanks for having me, huh?
Thank you so much. Go A's, and hopefully better stories. We'll see you around springtime.
All right, you got it.
All right, thank you. That is Joe Stiglich, Oakland A's insider for NBC Sports Bay Area. LT, I see you on hold. You've been waiting so patiently. I promise you're only going to have to wait for two more minutes. Very quick commercial break. We'll come right back, wrap up the show with his phone call, maybe some WWE talk as well. Don't go anywhere. This is The Weekend. Matt George with you on Sports 1140. Welcome back into The Weekend. Matt George riding solo today. Charles T. Hamilton is back home in the Bay Area for the holidays. He and I will not have a show next week for the Christmas weekend, but we will be back the weekend after that. And we thank you so much for joining us. Also, thank you to those listeners who joined us as we filled in for the lowdown on Monday of this week and Friday of last week. It was an absolute pleasure being able to fill in for Jay Ross and Damian Barling. LT, you have been the best, dude, hanging on through two interviews, been on the phone on hold for nearly an hour. Stage is yours, man. Take as much time as you want. What's up?
How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, my man.
Yeah, I want to talk about a couple things. I moved from the Bay Area to the Central Valley about a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, from Oakland, so I'm a Warrior fan, Raider fan, Oakland A's fan. I wanted to going to talk about the Raiders, then I'm going to jump over to the Warriors. With the Oakland Raiders, I think the problem starts with Jack Del Rio, and it dwindles down, because if you think about it, I believe he was 68-71 in Jacksonville. They made the playoffs twice. He was 1-2. He was there for, I think, somewhere around 8 seasons or so.
Yeah.
And he had this trend of his teams kind of peaking, and then they start to trend backwards. Now, everybody knows, and I believe it, that Derek Carr is still hurt. I don't think he's 100%. The defense is absolutely garbage. It's been playing better. Ken Norton Jr. should have been fired last year because the defense was atrocious last year. But you got a guy like Khalil Mack on your defense, and you got Bruce Irving, and now you add Bowman. You should be able to do some things. So they do look better. And I think that Todd Downing was a joke. I mean, he fired Bill Musgrave twice, fired him in Jacksonville, then turns around in Kansas and in Oakland. And I think if we would have brought Musgrave back, there would have been more of the offense would have been jail. And I think that's one of the greatest problems right now. And, you know, they're on the outside looking in this game that they should have won there. They started off hot. And then last week in Kansas City, you know, you don't even show up. You basically just go out there and you lame a lame duck and they just try to do something in the fourth quarter. And to me, that's a micro reflection of their head coach. And then jumping over to the Warriors, you know, Golden State Warriors, 9 in a row, I believe. Houston's been 10 in a row. Houston does not scare Warriors. The Warriors aren't scared of nobody. They're not worried about Houston. Houston beat us opening game of the season. Big ceremony for the Warriors. If you look at the Warriors, the first, like, 9 games of the season, they were kind of playing this back to day. They were able, you know, go up and then let time back. They won 9 in a row. They could win without.
All right, LT, I did it as long as I could handle it. Sounds like it is a windy day. I can look out my window. I can see how much wind is out there. You waited for so long. I tried to give you as much time as I could there, buddy. Thank you so much for calling. And I got almost all of your Raiders take. I could barely hear anything you were saying about the Warriors, except for they're not afraid of the Houston Rockets because of all the wind that is happening outside. So sorry to have cut you off there. I didn't want to, but we could only handle that for so long. To respond to you really quick, you think it's all on Jack Del Rio, or most of it's on Jack Del Rio. I tend to agree with you, except I think more of it's on Todd Downing, which ultimately is a bad reflection on Jack Del Rio. I think you're right in that area. And then in regards to Warriors and the Houston Rockets, I agree. Yeah, I mean, the Warriors aren't really going to be afraid of anybody until somebody steps up and beats them. And we are as talented as the Warriors are. It's going to be hard to stop that. That call ended up taking most of the remaining of the segment, but LT waited for so long. I wanted to give him as much chance as he could. Yeah, text line, I see it. I know, I'm sorry we left that call going for as long as possible. I wanted to see if he could get everything in and see if things would improve. It did not. Really quick, because I had to get it in there because Chuck's not here. I know people are going to give me hell for it, but I got to get some WWE stuff in here right as we are on our way out. WWE Clash of Champions pay-per-view is this Sunday. That's not a sport, Matt. Shut up. I like it. I enjoy it. And it's sports entertainment, so it works for me. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens will defeat Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura because Daniel Bryan will get involved. AJ Styles will beat Jinder Mahal. Carmella will cash in her Money in the Bank championship. This is my guess. I think the Usos will win, and then Baron Corbin will defeat Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. WWE fans know what the hell I was talking about. None. If you're not a WWE fan, I just yelled out a bunch of gibberish, but that's okay. That'll do it for the weekend here. Thank you again so much to Joe Stiglitz and Lance Vaughn Vogt for joining us on today's show. No show next week because of the Christmas holiday, so have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year. Hopefully we'll be speaking to you just after that, and let's make 2018 a great one. Merry Christmas, everybody. See ya.